I am Plunt on the line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Julie Van Rosendahl joins me, and the food writer, broadcaster, and one of the Bridge Ladies joins me to talk about their latest Best of Bridge Sunday Suppers. It's a great book that features recipes for any Sunday night or any night when you want to get together with others, a big group or small, for a meal. There are delicious starters, soups, and salads that are innovative yet not difficult to put together. You likely have most of the ingredients already or are handy. And there are, of course, impressive main courses that will certainly knock the socks off of guests, but that don't appear challenging or time-consuming to make. That's the gift of these Bridge books. They're accessible and don't overwhelm one in the kitchen. They're books that are welcoming, and they have been for over 40 years now in kitchens across the country with their unique binding, lettering, and the occasional one-liner that amuses. Julie Van Rosendahl has a food column on the Calgary Eye-Opener broadcast on CBC Radio there, and her writing is seen in various newspapers and magazines across the country. She's written 7 best-selling cookbooks. Her website is at dinnerwithjulie.com. This new book is published by Robert Rose. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Julie Van Rosendahl. Ms. Van Rosendahl, good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
So as busy as we all are, and you know, a lot of us, you know, aren't home the regular hours of dinner nowadays because of our jobs or the commute, and we just seem to grab dinner on the go. I mean, it seems like we're eating out a lot if we look at people's Facebook pages or Instagram. Supper on Sunday or any day of the week, you know, that doesn't happen anymore. And what I've missed about it is the ritual of it. I mean, but, you know, a lot of people, the young people I know, are starting to get back to it, that it's important once again. Are you finding that as well?
Definitely. I'm finding there's sort of a general trend towards what's old is new again, you know, and that old ritual of getting together on Sundays, which, you know, traditionally, but everything was closed on a Sunday. People didn't work on Sundays.
Right.
And perhaps, you know, you could only afford a nice piece of meat, you know, on that one day a week. So there are a lot of reasons that Sunday suppers were, you know, generations ago, sort of a big thing. And not even that long ago. I remember as a kid always getting together for Sunday suppers. And I think these days, it's not the same in terms of the days of the week. They kind of all run together. Everyone's doing things. Everything is open all the time. You know, we're all connected digitally. But I think there's a particular need for us to disconnect and reconnect with each other, you know, and there's no better way to do that than around the table. And we all have to eat anyway, right?
That's right.
So I think it's a concept that people get, and it's something that anyone can do.
So what do you say to people then who say a big supper with multiple courses on a Sunday night is just too much time and effort to pull off?
Well, I say it doesn't have to be multiple courses. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It can be just a pot of stew plunked in the middle of the table. It's not really what's on the table. It's who's around it, right? And if you do want to have, you know, say you have a huge family, once you get all the kids and the grandkids and, you know, friends, or that it's too intimidating to cook for all those people, get everyone to bring something, you know?
Yeah.
Like, bring back the potluck. Everyone wants to, you know, bring something anyway. People will say, what can I bring? Just say, bring a dessert, bring a salad. And that's an easy way to sort of cobble together a meal as well. But I feel like it doesn't have to be a prime rib or a pot roast or something elaborate. It can be, you know, a vegetarian curry. Like, it doesn't really matter what it is, just as long as it's delicious and everyone's around the table to share it.
And the other thing in this book, Best of Bridge Sunday Suppers, is that there are a lot of things that one can make with stuff that they have around the house. And I'm thinking of the Ichiban salad, which, I mean, all of us have ramen noodles socked away in our cupboards, don't we?
Exactly. And that's something that really, I don't know, that is a recipe that I grew up with.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the original Best of Bridge books were very much, you know, recipes collected from families and family members and friends, and tended to call for ingredients like soup, you know, or like, you know, dry noodles. And so that just reminds me of my childhood. And it's super fast to mix up. I mean, that was one thing that my sisters and I would make. You know, we'd chop the cabbage and crumble up the noodles and shake together the dressing in a jar. And I think it's a great opportunity when you have more time on a Sunday and when everyone's, you know, home from school, if you have kids around, to get them involved in the kitchen and just, you know, get them to help prep. It's a great screen-free way to spend time with your family, and it teaches them, you know, essential life skills that they'll have with them forever.
Indeed, yeah. And you know, I was looking at the soup recipes, and this is the perfect time of the year for soup. So it's, it's hearty. And the other thing, too, about the soup and salad recipes in this book, if you want to double up, you can make that the center of the meal, right?
Oh, exactly. And if you don't have a huge family, you know, soups and salads and well, salads don't freeze that well, but stews and soups, if you have a big batch that you make on a Sunday, it can carry you through the week, right? That sets you up for lunches. Most of those dishes freeze well, so you can, you know, have another meal down the road.
Is there a favorite soup that you like making out of this book?
Oh, there's a curried lentil, red lentil and carrot and sweet potato soup that I love that you can make vegan if you use coconut milk and vegetable stock, and everybody just loves it. And it's pureed, so you can just, you know, sip it, and it makes great leftovers, and so that's one that I make quite often.
You have a recipe in the book for soup stock, and it calls for roasting the bones. A lot of us grew up learning how to make soup stock by just taking the bones that we'd get at the supermarket and then boiling them down. But what's the attraction to roasting the bones first?
Well, you know, it's not necessary. There are lots of ways that you can make soup stock, but just putting the you know, chicken or turkey carcass into the oven and roasting it a little bit, well, it just caramelizes it a little bit more. I mean, you have that darker meat. That's where the flavor is. So you have sort of a richer, darker stock.
Yeah.
It's just like, you know, browning your meat before you add the liquid for a stew.
Mm.
It's browning meat will create flavor. You know, that's how you get gravy, how you get flavorful stews, and so it works with stock as well.
And you don't get that crap at the top that foams up, right? Because the blood is already, I guess, cooked out when it's roasted, I suppose.
Yeah, I mean, it's already cooked once it's roasted.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if you get some sort of foam at the top. The trick with stock is to do it on a sort of low heat, like keep it gentle. If it's at a rolling boil, it's going to emulsify. You know, it's not going to be sort of a clear stock, which you might not care about.
Yeah.
But one great way to do stock is in the slow cooker.
Mm.
Just, you know, throw the carcass in, put a, you know, half an onion, or I have a bag of vegetable scraps that I keep in the freezer,
big
Ziploc bag, you know, your celery ends and your onion skins, whatever, and I sort of throw a few of those in with the chicken, the turkey carcass, and yeah, it's like every whole bird comes with free batch of stock if you just make it.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned turkey, and we've just had, most of us have had turkey. Because of Thanksgiving. Where are you on stuffing the turkey? Did you put it inside or out?
I put it inside. Uh-huh. I say if it's stuffing is not cooked inside the turkey, it's just a bread casserole. And, you know, and this was a trend that, a few years ago, people started, you know, saying, oh, don't stuff the turkey. And I get the reasons why, but we grew up with stuffed turkey. And if you're worried about it, what I just tell people is, you know, spoon out the stuffing and pop it in the microwave or pop it in the oven just to make sure it's heated through really well.
Yeah.
And it just tastes way much better, you know. And the bits of stuffing coming out of the turkey are the best part of the whole meal, you know. When you're still hungry, you've just gone for a big walk, you know, you're anticipating the turkey dinner, that's the best part.
And that's the other thing about roast turkeys, chickens, roast chicken especially. A lot of us are apprehensive about trying it because we're scared we'll screw it up. It could be, and if that's the center of the meal and it doesn't turn out well or it's overdone, you know, the meal's gone.
Well, and that's how you learn, right? That's how you learn to cook. And I feel like the bar has been set so high. There's so much, you know, in the way of, like, cooking shows and competition shows and people just have these high expectations of themselves. And I think, you know, if someone invites me over for dinner and the, you know, the bird is overcooked or other, like, that's just life, right?
Yeah.
And no one's going to complain. If you're feeding them, no one's going to complain that you didn't cook it quite right. But the more you do, the more you figure out, you know, what meat's supposed to look like or feel like, and you get a sense of it. And then next time you know better.
Yeah, and, right? And for a guy like me, I mean, it's a great way, you know, to keep trying. to get to know your kitchen and know your equipment, how the oven works and things like that.
Exactly.
And I think more people should do that rather than say not even try, right?
Exactly. And, you know, I think being able to cook a few things really well, you know, you don't have to be able to cook everything. But
yeah.
if you know how to cook a pot of pasta, you know how to roast a chicken, you know, those are pretty simple things. And if you have those skills, there's a lot of things that you can do with it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to invite somebody over, you know how to roast a chicken, you do it a lot, then you have the confidence to pull it off and not stress out about whether it's going to work out or not.
There are a number of recipes in the book for pork, and you know, I tend to recall a few years ago how people would turn their nose up at pork, or they thought it was not as healthy as, say, other white meats. But pork has made a bit of a comeback, hasn't it?
Yeah, oh, it definitely has. Pork is very trendy right now, all the cuts of pork. And I love it. I mean, pulled pork is one of my favorite things to make for a big crowd. You can do it in the slow cooker, you can do it in the oven, and it's inexpensive. Pork shoulder is not... a pricey cut, and it's great if you have like a range of people. If you have little kids and grown-ups, and some people might have bigger appetites and smaller appetites, you can kind of let them serve themselves, make a batch of biscuits, and it's just something that makes everybody happy.
You've got a recipe in the book for pork chops that are covered in cornflakes.
Oh yeah.
And cornflakes, yeah, cornflakes is an interesting thing because, I mean, I remember as a kid I'd had that with chicken, and it's very tasty, and you can do that in the oven without having to, say, fry your pork or your chicken, right?
Yeah. Well, and that, again, was another, sort of a throwback to the 80s, you know, pork chops and cereal was a big ingredient. I mean, if you look in the original Best of Ridge cookbooks, like, their first book came out in 1975. And they sold almost 4 million books, you know, in the 70s and 80s and 90s. And a lot of the recipes called for cereal and, you know, tins of soup. And that's what people cooked back then. But it's not just because convenience food was a trend and it was new and it was, you know, enticing. But it was also really delicious, And things like cornflakes make a really crunchy exterior. It's something that you have in the house already. You know, not everybody has panko, you know, Japanese breadcrumbs in the cupboard, but everyone has cereal. So, yeah, I think it's the whole sort of theme of Best of Ridge is approachable home cooking, and we tried to include recipes that kind of reflected their original vision, you know, and those recipes that you felt like you can do that weren't intimidating, that didn't require a special trip to the store, that just made it easy to feed your family.
Now, you have a recipe in the book for a chicken. I guess you can use a brick, but in the book you say that you use two cast iron pans to, say, I guess, flatten the chicken. That interested me because I just recently bought a cast iron pan, and I've been trying to use it for everything that I can.
And
I've obsessed over seasoning it and the sort and making sure that it's non-stick. Are you a big fan of that in your kitchen?
Oh, yeah. I use cast iron all the time, and when it's well seasoned, it's perfectly nonstick.
Yeah.
But without that coating, and it really, people are afraid of cast iron. But to get a nice seasoned coating, you just need fat and heat. Lard, like just some inexpensive lard from the grocery store, works well. Cover it with a thick layer, stick it in the oven, and if it's new cast iron, which looks sort of rough and gray, it's not that nice. Doesn't have that nice smooth black patina yet.
Mm-hmm.
Just cover it with oil or fat and throw it on the, you know, the lower oven rack just as you cook other things, you know, while you're making dinner, while you're making banana bread or whatever, and that combination of heat and fat will give it a nice seasoning. In fact, when I roast chickens, most often I do it in my cast iron skillet.
Really?
Because the heat and the fat, animal fat works really, really well for seasoning cast iron.
Huh.
And then you can take your bird out of the cast iron skillet and make the gravy right in the skillet, right? You don't have to scrape it out into another pan.
Yeah.
It's just so easy, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, and so with the chicken under a brick, very few people have actual bricks in their kitchen.
Right.
But cast iron is nice and heavy. So the idea is to sort of weigh it down so it flattens and it's even and it cooks through quickly and evenly. A whole bird can be a little bit, you know, awkward to cook, you know, without part of it drying out and part of it, you know. So, yeah, just flattening it out makes it faster and evener.
Yeah, yeah. You do recipes in there in terms of how to make gravy, because, I mean, a lot of us, you know, if we do end up roasting a bird, or say a prime rib like you have on the cover, it can get screwed up pretty easily. Mm-hmm. And you're very encouraging in the recipes here on gravy, because, you know, if it's too watery, you know what to do, or if it's too thick, you know what to do to fix it, right?
That's right. Well, and the best way to learn how to make things like gravy is by doing it.
Yeah.
You know, you can watch other people do it, you can read about doing it, but you can't get a feel for it until you actually do it. And you know, you may have a couple batches that aren't perfect, but it's an inexpensive way to learn how to cook, just by using the ingredients that you have and trying, and, you know, if it doesn't work, then you give it a try the next time, and eventually you have perfect gravy.
Yeah.
It's a lot of cooking has to do with feel, right?
Yeah.
Sight, and there's so many variables too. Like, you know, one person might roast a chicken and get a half a cup of drippings. One person might get 2 tablespoons of drippings.
Yeah.
And a lot of recipes don't take that into consideration, right? They start with a measurement, and, you know, what if you don't have that measurement? What if you don't have, you know, a lot of those dark bits that make a flavorful gravy? So you have to. You have to kind of play it by ear sometime and just trust your instincts.
What I like about the Best of Bridge books, and I've talked to you before, and I've talked to Mary and Sue last year, is just for someone who likes to eat, obviously, who enjoys parts of cooking, this book gives one such confidence into trying things like rack of lamb, or mm-hmm. or even a dessert when you know, baking in the sort of looks such a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you must get that from readers about how much they're able to cook now because of these books.
Well, and I think that, you know, the original Best of Bridge was very, because they were so approachable, they were all home cooks, the ladies who wrote the first books. I think that gives people a lot more confidence. You know, it's there's sorts of recipes that you might get from your neighbors or your aunt or your friend, you know, things that you feel like you could make yourself. And I think that's important, starting off not being intimidated. But yeah, I think it's great to hear when people say, oh, we've been making these scalloped potatoes for years and years and years, because it's just such a solid recipe and it makes me feel like I can do it. Like, that's just the best, the best feeling.
Yeah, and a dessert. I mean, let's end on that. What do you like making, or what's popular around your table on Sunday nights?
Ooh, depends on the season. You know, in the summer, I like to make, you know, pavlovas, meringues with lemon curd and fruit, and pie. Like, everyone always loves pie. There's an upside down pear gingerbread that we make every Thanksgiving, and in the fall when, you know, apples and pears are in season. Like a lot of basics.
Yeah.
Stovetop pudding. You know, nobody makes pudding from scratch anymore. It's all from a box, but it's so easy to make from scratch. So, yeah, we just tried to come up with a whole lot of basics that could be like, you know, your kitchen toolbox. There are so many recipes out there, and you can get, you know, recipes for just about anything, and a lot of them are really, you know, really out there. But when it comes down to it, most people are just looking for a good banana bread recipe, you know, like a good chocolate cake that they can, you know, pull out every time there's a birthday. They know it's going to work, and that's what we're sort of going for, those basics that put you slightly out of your comfort zone, but not completely.
Indeed, indeed. Yeah, and this book is full of those recipes and great staples to start this Sunday in particular. It's nice talking again, Julie. All the best to you and the other Bridge ladies.
Thanks so much.